continues its aggression on the Arab country following its takeover by militants. Israel launched attacks on the province of Daraa, targeting military facilities and equipment near the city of Azra. The attack caused explosions at ammunition depots. The city of Daraa was hit as well. Israeli army tanks and armored vehicles have also crossed into the so-called buffer zone, separating the occupied Golan Heights from Syria. Meanwhile, political developments are underway in Syria as the Syrian prime minister met with the militants' representative Muhammad al-Julani and Muhammad al-Bashir, who has been assigned as the head of the transitional government. The meeting focused on mechanisms for a smooth transfer of power and preventing chaos in the country. Well, now joining us live from Belfast is Mr. Saib Shath, author and commentator. First of all, Mr. Shath, thank you very much for joining us. I do want to start off with the latest developments, as we have just mentioned. After the fall of the Syrian government, we have now had many mixed reactions from political leaders across the world. And now the HTS has tasked Mohammed al-Bashir with leading the transition of power and forming a new government. How do you assess the Syrian political situation at the moment, Mr. Shath?
It's very fluid. As the Western coalition versus America, Europe, Turkey, and the Zionist entity, they want to use this change face and new etiquette by the leader of Jabhat al-Nusra, which is Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, and al-Bashir as well now, as to show they're going to create stability and to reassure the different diverse communities and societies in Syria so they can govern according to a democratic, futuristic kind of vision they're trying to sell to the people. And they are. We witness a lot of people issuing calls, the Christians from Aleppo, the Shia in Syria, the Alawite as well. They're asking for some assurances for their properties and for their livelihood and for their lives as well. There is a huge kind of influx of immigration I've been told about from such people from the direction of Aleppo. They are displaced now. So these groups, if we look, the United States of America, Israel, Europe, and Turkey, they got Al-Qaeda to take over Syria. Whatever name they want to say, their goals, number one goals is to eliminate the Iranian advisors' presence in Syria, who were supplying Hezbollah and training Hezbollah and the Palestinian resistance. The second, that the Israelis want to destroy Syria as a state and to create in the future, after destroying its military capabilities, many states, Bundestans, sectarian Bundestans, one for the Kurds, one for the Shiites, one for the Alawis, one for the Sunnis, and a plus, it's going to take some sort of pieces of Syrian territories. And keep all of these entities at war with each other to keep Syria is weakened all the time. Europe and the United States of America, they want to eliminate the presence of the Russians in Syria. The Turkish, they want to make sure that they control Aleppo and they control the areas in East Euphrates, which they are not going to allow the Kurdish separate movement in there to declare self even autonomy or self-ruled areas. This is the interest of the groups who were behind the destruction of Syria. And today, the Israelis are attacking all over the south of Syria, and they're going to attack further to eliminate all the strings of the Syrian army and its capabilities to make sure the Syria in the future is the same. The Syrian army, I mean, in the future, have the same capacity and capabilities like the Lebanese army.
Well, I'd like to thank you very much, Mr. Saib Shath, author and commentator, joining us there from Belfast. A pleasure to have you with us. The fall of the Syrian government continues to draw reactions from political leaders across the world. U.S. President Joe Biden called it a historic opportunity for Syrians, but warned of uncertainty ahead. China's foreign ministry spokesman urged all parties to prioritize the Syrian people's welfare and pursue a political resolution, while Japan expressed strong concern and hopes for humanitarian improvements. U.N. Secretary General Antonio Guterres encouraged all Syrians to use the current situation as a chance for peace. Meanwhile, Italy's foreign minister Antonio Tajani voiced concern, announcing emergency consultations to monitor the situation closely. A senior British minister says the UK will consider removing the proscribed status of a Syrian armed group that led the overthrow of Bashar al-Assad's government. Pat McFadden has said that the decision will partly depend on how the Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS, behaves moving forward. He emphasized that the decision is not solely up to the UK, with the countries around the world, including the United States and various European countries, likely to reassess their stance on the group as well. Two American officials also confirmed that the U.S. government is considering the possibility of removing the group from its foreign terrorist organizations list. HTS, which once aligned itself with Al-Qaeda, has played a prominent role in the recent overthrow of the Syrian government. Well, another deadly day for Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip as Israeli military continues to pound the blockaded territory. At least 7 people were killed and a number of others injured after Israeli warplanes bombed a group of Palestinians in Beit Lahia, northern Gaza. Casualties were also reported after an Israeli fighter jet targeted a school housing displaced Palestinians in the Jabalia refugee camp. Israeli airstrikes on the Al-Majazi refugee camp in central Gaza have left several fatalities, including children. In the south, an ambulance crew was directly hit by an air raid in Rafah. The strike also left several people injured. The Israeli aggression against Gaza began in October last year. Since then, over 44,700 people have been killed and more than 106,000 others injured. Our correspondent in southern Gaza, Ahmed al-Najjar, joined us earlier from Khan Yunis with an update on the Israeli atrocities across the besieged strip.
Let me just start with this recent massacre that took place in Al-Maghazi camp in the middle area of the Gaza Strip that targeted a home for a Sori family. This killed 4 little children. Also during the night, a tent was targeted, killing at least one man and critically injuring another baby boy. Also here in the southern parts, the starvation and the severe shortage of pretty much every aspect of humanitarian needs, talking about food, just flour, which has dropped to the point that forced people and families here, parents, to risk their life to go to the northern outskirts of Rafah City, as 4 Palestinians were targeted today on the northern parts of the Rafah City. The occupations has massacred more Palestinians in Beit Lahia by targeting a group of people within the middle of Beit Lahia camp that has been subjected for more than 66 days now. More Palestinians are being killed in the mid of the collapse, the total collapse of the health sector and civil defense services there. The occupations has targeted these facilities, targeted these departments to make sure that Palestinians don't receive any necessary aid or services in an attempt to depopulate the area from the Palestinians there.
The Palestinian resistance fighters say they have struck a gathering of Israeli troops in the northern Gaza Strip, leaving a number of casualties among the enemy forces. The Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigade has claimed responsibility for the attack. The group says its forces shelled the gathering of Israeli troopers near a military club in Jabalia. Israeli media say the attack, which hit a military truck, has left at least 4 troopers dead. The Israeli military deployed at least 3 helicopters to evacuate the dead and the injured. Palestinian resistance groups have been fighting Israeli occupation forces since the regime began its ground incursion into Gaza in October last year. Israel has so far confirmed the deaths of over 800 troopers in the Gaza clashes. Israeli drone strikes in the West Bank have killed 2 Palestinians. Reports indicate 2 Palestinian youths were killed in West Bank city of Tubas following serious injuries they sustained in Israeli strikes. Palestinian resistance groups, including Al-Qassam brigades, are engaged in armed resistance against Israeli raids that have intensified since the Al-Aqsa flood operation. Over 800 Palestinians have been killed and some 12,000 people detained in the occupied West Bank since October last year. More Israeli violations of the ceasefire agreement with Lebanon, with the regime launching more strikes on the country's south. Lebanon's army says 1 civilian has been killed and 4 soldiers have been injured in an Israeli strike on a vehicle in Bint Jbel in the south. Earlier, Israeli forces targeted Naqoura town and the surrounding areas. On Saturday, three civilians, including a woman, were killed in an Israeli drone attack on Dibin in South Lebanon. Israeli forces also entered a minefield on Lebanon's border with the occupied Palestinian territories, killing one person and injuring a number of others. The explosion also led to the death of four Israeli soldiers. It took 12 hours to extract their bodies. The truce between Israel and Lebanon's Hezbollah took effect on November the 27th. Our correspondent in Beirut, Mariam Saleh, says Israel's repeated violations of the ceasefire deal comes as no surprise, as the regime has repeatedly shown disregard for negotiations and regional security.
The Israelis have never actually respected ceasefires or any agreement. But Hezbollah, on the other hand, has said very clearly they're putting this in the hands of the political leadership and they're giving this a chance. But you have the Israelis continuously targeting not only civilians and the towns, but also the Lebanese army posts and the Lebanese army soldiers and officers. And so this is another issue that the Lebanon has really extended to the committee, which needs to overlook the ceasefire. Now, we learned from the cabinet saying that there will be more serious measures taken on the issue of the ceasefire. The fact that the Lebanese people continue to defy a daily warning by the Israelis, which is issued against 62 villages, telling them not to return to those villages. And they continue daily destruction. There's daily sounds of explosions that are heard even to the towns and the cities of Tyre and Sidon. We can hear loud explosions. That is usually the result of the Israelis detonating and destroying whatever is left of the houses, the mosques, and the schools, and the municipalities that are in the border towns. Well, it's very unlikely that there will be any measures taken, especially against Israel. We know this from fact and based on experience. And, of course, you have the United States, which is a continuous staunch backer of the Israelis. It is part of the committee. But you have the UNIFIL in France somewhat giving a balance when it comes to the continuous violations. We know that there were harsh language used by the French towards the Israelis, telling them they need to stop their violations. But we also have certain guarantees that were given from the committee members to the Lebanese government that after the 60-day period ends, then there should be no more Israeli occupation of South Lebanon.
Yemeni armed forces say they have staged a drone attack on the Yavni area of the Israeli-occupied territories. The Yemenis conduct such operations in support of the people of Palestine. Let's listen to the spokesman of the Yemeni military brigadier general Yahya Sari.
The UAV unit of the Yemeni armed forces carried out a specific military operation with a drone against a sensitive target of the Israeli enemy in the Yafina area of Ashdod, south of the Yafa area in the occupied Palestine. The drone successfully achieved its objective. This operation comes within the fifth phase of supporting the Palestinian resistance. The Yemeni armed forces confirm that they will confront any Israeli aggression against our country with more specific military operations, and that their support operations for the Palestinian people will not stop until the aggression stops and the siege on the Gaza Strip is lifted.
The South Korean Ministry of Justice imposed a travel ban on President Yoon Suk-yeol following his failed attempt to impose martial law nationwide. Earlier, the country's prosecutor office announced it has opened a criminal case against Yoon Suk-yeol. On Saturday, the embattled president survived an impeachment motion filed by the opposition after his ruling party boycotted the votes in parliament. The ruling party has also said the president's official responsibilities will be reduced and his prime minister will take on more duties. The opposition parties, however, accused the ruling party of staging a second coup by clinging to power. Meanwhile, thousands of people across the country continue their protests demanding the president to step down.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Economic divide.
Oh, In the quest for regional dominance, there is a military approach that can attempt to crush a country. This is done with the intention of economic goals, such as trade corridors. This is the story of the Israeli regime, which, backed by the U.S. and its military equipment, has tried to crush the Gaza Strip and Hamas, then Lebanon and Hezbollah, but in vain. The old but not discarded new Middle East, or West Asia, as we call it, may be an aspiration not discarded, but is still being pursued. Yet the U.S. and the Israeli regime fail to learn from their defeats in both Lebanon and the Gaza Strip. If there was a time that the Israeli regime is facing an existential threat, that time is now. In today's program, we'll be looking at its losses and where it may be headed to into the future. The Israeli regime has submitted to a ceasefire with Lebanon and Hezbollah, a major defeat for the regime. Could not even invade Lebanon. It couldn't capture a village or town, let alone dismantle Hezbollah. And it has paid a huge price for it. When it comes to the Israeli losses, there's so much, especially the north suffered massive economic infrastructure and property damage. Many of the properties are too expensive for the settlers to return to in terms of the damages incurred. And then you have the genocidal cost. That has continued. Israel's economy, the ceasefire, well, doesn't mean the end of the onslaught. Even if the agreement with Hezbollah holds, the onslaught in Gaza is grinding on while high war costs and mismanagement continue to weigh in on the economy. And the Israeli budget, meanwhile, is suffering because of that. Now, in this program, we'll be covering these topics and more with our guest, Nicholas Kosmatopoulos, who's a politics professor that you see there. And also, we have Frank Wright, who will talk about all of this. He's a geopolitical analyst.
I'm Nicholas Kosmatopoulos. I'm an associate professor of politics and anthropology at the American University of Beirut. Thank you for having me on the show. The financial question, the costs of war, is extremely important. These are only the costs that relate to the protection of the population, but if you also add to these budget items, if you add also the immense costs that the Iron Dome has caused, the missiles, you know, the flying of airplanes, I'm not really an economist myself, but I can imagine that this has been a huge black hole in the Israeli budget, state budget. I think there are also other economic losses, such as many businesses.
Let's take a look at some of the stats when it comes to the Israeli losses. The ones standing out the most are the rockets that have been fired into the northern occupied Palestine. Now, Hezbollah conducted 23 operations per day. This clearly shows that this was not a win for the Israeli regime, and those are some of the other facts that you see there. Well, the losses of northern occupied Palestine are pretty significant. Material damage, over $1 billion. Property damage, pretty steep, at over $400 million. And then you have indirect damages coming in at over $1 billion also. The Israeli Tax Authority reported over 9,000 buildings and over 7,000 vehicles were either damaged and or destroyed.
The latest ICC ruling, you know, the arrest warrant, against Netanyahu and Gallant, I think it's a major issue. This is also part of the list of losses and defeats and disadvantages that the latest Israeli aggression and genocidal attacks in Gaza and Lebanon have brought to itself. On the basis of this discussion, you see also the reactions in the domestic scene of Israel. You see some, especially the far right, being very angry about the agreement with Lebanon. They want to continue the war, despite the fact that even their own people practically are against that war, because much of their military has been weakened and their own soldiers defy orders to fight in the north.
We're now demonstrating because we've seen that a ceasefire is possible. There's a ceasefire in the north. It's time for a ceasefire in the south. 101 hostages are waiting for 418 days for Netanyahu to make the right decision. Ceasefire now and bring them home now.
Time now to take a look at some social media posts, but first, a developing story. Trump has threatened 100% tariff on BRICS countries if they pursue creating a new currency. He has said the idea that the BRICS countries are trying to move away from the dollar while we stand by and watch, well, that's over. He said we require a commitment from these countries that they will neither create a new BRICS currency nor back any other currency to replace the mighty U.S. dollar, or they will face 100% tariffs and should expect to say goodbye to selling into the wonderful U.S. economy. Sounds like there's going to be trade wars brewing with some BRICS countries at a minimum. All right, our first social media post. Israel does not understand the word ceasefire. The U.S. does not do diplomacy. Lebanon ceasefire was a public relations stunt and an acknowledgement that neither Israel nor the U.S. can defeat Hezbollah. If the U.S. can't defeat Hezbollah, how can it take on China? Well, it can't, but it can create untold human suffering in pursuit of empire and colonial aims. True Thanksgiving spirit. Well, that is the whole issue when it comes to the Israeli regime. This is an economic device take, and also its main backer of the U.S. If Israel has not succeeded in the Gaza Strip or in Lebanon, how does it even think that it can take on other powers such as Iran? Well, as for the U.S., quick question, when was the last time the U.S. even won a war? Its defeats in Syria, in Yemen, in Iraq, and in Afghanistan prove this, not to mention its maximum pressure policy defeat against Iran. Next up, we'll take a look at this video where it's describing 70% of Hezbollah's UAV stockpile and most of the cruise missile inventory of Hezbollah's aerial unit, 127, were destroyed yesterday. 150-plus UAV launching positions, approximately 30% of the unit's command centers, approximately 20 weapons storage facilities containing UAVs and cruise missiles, and approximately 4 UAV and cruise missile manufacturing workshops. All right, our response, yes, it is true that Hezbollah has lost a lot of its missiles and military capabilities, but to write it off, well, these are some of the missile capabilities of Hezbollah's firepower and missiles, which numbered over 100,000. Now, we ask you, if Hezbollah fired over 8,000 rockets and 23 operations per day, that was its average, it doesn't even come close to it pointing to a dwindling missile arsenal.
Well, Israeli media itself is reporting that the ceasefire is a victory for Netanyahu of sorts because, of course, of the tremendous losses which have been inflicted in the Israeli economy in one dimension. Reports late in October suggested that in the coming year, Israel may see a loss of over $100 billion. There will be further costs in terms of restoration because many of those buildings those people lived in have been destroyed or converted for use by the IDF. So the costs of this are going to mount. Whilst the Israeli press has been very good so far at reporting on multiple crises inside Israel, recent moves to isolate and indeed disconnect Haaretz and de-recognise it by the Israeli government may see a further tightening of reporting from within Israel.
It's a good time to review some of the highlights there by our guest, Frank. He indicated the Israeli losses of the genocidal war on the Gaza Strip and also on Lebanon together exceeded over $100 billion. He also indicated the failure of the residents of the northern occupied Palestine to return to their homes as promised by the Israeli regime. He pointed to restoration costs, and that's a good point, especially, he said, given that many buildings were actually converted for both the U.S. and also the IF regime forces. Well, all these point to the regime's failures.
It's not just the financial, but also the tremendous human cost, which I think stands at over 43,000 casualties now, whose ferocity and severity have been attested to by people like Dr. Mark Perlmutter, a Jewish-American surgeon, who's returned and presented evidence that children and toddlers are routinely executed by sniper fire, for example, as well as women and healthcare workers. So apart from the human cost and the financial cost, due to the habits of Western media, we might say, we typically do not experience the viewpoint that is presented in Israel's own media itself, which for months now has strongly suggested that Netanyahu is pursuing these conflicts simply to stay in power. The return of the hostages would remove one of his reasons for the war and would bring the war to a close, and which would see him then have to face charges, potentially, but also have to explain in an October the 7th inquiry why he did not heed warnings about the attacks themselves. Now, former prime ministers have said that Netanyahu does not want this inquiry because he was warned precisely of October the 7th.
Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
It's time now to take a look at some news with an economic flavor in our InfoNews section. First up, Trump and tariffs. That's right, before coming into office, officially he has upped the ante on it, vowing massive taxes on goods from Mexico, Canada, and China starting from day one. He has said, quote, on January 20th, I will charge Mexico and Canada a 25% tariff on all products coming into the U.S. and its ridiculous open borders. That's how he characterized it. He said this tariff will remain in effect until such time as drugs, in particular fentanyl and all illegal aliens, stop this invasion of our country. Next, well, let's take a look at a reaction. We picked this entry because China has had one to Trump tariffs. It said that it could devalue the yuan to spite Trump, and such a move would be a response to these U.S. tariff hikes by Trump. U.S. import taxes on Chinese goods will be raised to 60% from the current 20% mark. Fresh levies will also hit imports from Malaysia and Vietnam as well. Now you have U.S. tariffs to cost jobs as a result once and when this takes into effect. Mexico has warned Trump proposed tariffs to cost 400,000 U.S. jobs. Mexico has emphasized interconnectivity of economic ties with the U.S. and the mutual threat of tariffs to be the reasons, citing if there are U.S. tariffs, Mexico would also raise the tariffs. Then a process that has been going on for quite some time and has to deal with de-dollarization, in particular when it comes to Russia and Iran, who have now completed the de-dollarization process between the two countries. They've completely shifted to trade in their national currencies. And this will allow travelers from both countries to use their domestic debit cards for purchases in either Iran or in Russia. It's time now to take a look at a special investigation. South Africa's illegal gold miners are locked in an underground standoff with police in South Africa. Workers at illegal gold mines like these are known as Zamas, meaning one who takes a chance in the Zulu language. We looked at this, of which it expanded more, saying inside South Africa's ruthless gang-controlled gold mines, that's what's happening, where South Africa's mining industry has gone into decline over the last three decades. Many of these have gone on to become the Zamazamas at the abandoned mines. Now, this is an industry that has spiraled out of control with mafia-like gangs running it, an illegal industry that involves people of different races and classes. This is the in-depth section of the program. The war toll on the Israeli regime from its war with Lebanon proves how the regime was forced into defeat, since it could not achieve its stated goal, the return of its settlers into northern occupied Palestine. But the economic costs and damages incurred as a result from both wars is quite staggering. The war costs become clear. First, the total, coming in at $67.3 billion. No surprise that that is so much that it has accumulated because of the fact that you have daily costs that have hit $133 million. These are no matters to be laughing at in terms of how high these factors are. The one factor missing here is, what about Israel's cash or savings on hand? Well, the Southern Front communities, they have not been spared either. The war has incurred $337.5 million in damages when it comes to the communities near the Gaza Strip. The central part of occupied Palestine, it has also suffered significant losses. For example, a single missile in an area by the name of Had HaSharon damaged 2,000 apartments, $150 million worth altogether. And, of course, that is where the guest comes in, of which we have our first guest, Nicholas Kosmatopoulos, who is a political professor, giving us this answer.
All this constant emergency situation that the Israeli military operations and the Israeli attacks have introduced to the country. I can imagine that the settlers and the citizens, settler citizens of Israel, are not happy with this. They don't feel safe. The promise of the Netanyahu and its government to keep them safe has never materialized, not even in the north, not even lately in places like Haifa or Tel Aviv. So there's a lot that went wrong in terms of what the government has done. So I could imagine that this is in their own interest to stop the wars.
All right, that was Nicholas Kosmatopoulos. Taking a look at the other factors that show that Israel has incurred losses, we're looking at the economic shock and where it has come in terms of the indirect effects. Those are actually 90% of the story here. Investment, for example, productivity growth, labor market disruptions, these are all losses for the Israeli regime. The war cost that has been accrued at this point from the year 2023 through the year 2025, which is an estimate, it has been a figure of $55.6 billion, the actual figure being that, up to $120 billion. Now, what does that mean? That means that you're looking at a negative 10% contraction when it comes to Israel's economy, or at the most, if we're looking at $120 billion of cost, that's a 20% contraction, which obviously is quite high when it comes to Israel's economy. Well, the Israeli GDP, it was projected to grow 3% for the year 2024. That was the projection. But at this point, we're looking at 1.5%, the actual GDP growth for this year, which is coming to an end in the calendar year. The credit downgrades are a big factor, of which you have the three major agencies, Fitch, S&P, and Moody's, to have all downgraded Israel, which makes it very hard for Israel to be able to actually borrow money. To get a reaction on that, we have our other guest rejoining us now, and the comments that he gave is quite startling. Frank Wright, a geopolitical analyst, said this.
If Israel is interested in peace and coexistence, then it should. But unfortunately, it appears that the leadership is dedicated to a strategy of a permanent emergency. If you have a permanent state of emergency, of course, you have a compelling reason to continue United States financial and military aid. on which Israel increasingly relies, having suffered, according to Le Monde, damages up to $100 billion as a result of its recent campaigns over the last year. So yes, I think Israel is at an existential moment.
Hello, and welcome to the Quick Tech section. I'm Keresh Poonamati. Israel's economy is being battered due to the genocidal onslaught it is waging in the Gaza Strip. There is no doubt about that. One sector, however, that continues to suffer immensely and has recently suffered a huge setback is Israel's tech sector. First, Israel's tech is the most contributor to Israel's economy. The tech sector accounts for about a fifth of Israel's gross domestic product, or the GDP. Half of exports and about a quarter of total revenues generated from salaried employees, income taxes, and company taxation, but the tech sector has nosedived, a process which began even before the genocidal war began back on October the 7th. Investment in the sector began to show cracks, and it had to deal with the judicial reforms, which resulted in massive anti-cabinet demos. Now, with the genocide in its 14th month and after enduring a war with Lebanon, the sector continues to lose investors. Investments in tech startups slumped 46% in the last quarter of 2023 as foreign funds shy away from reinvestment in local markets, a figure which peaked at 60%. The Israeli cabinet also continues to struggle on the battlefield, unable to fill in the adequate numbers needed to continue the onslaught. This has continued to put pressure on the workforce of the tech sector. At one point, the Israeli army mobilized more than 350,000 reserve IOF regime forces. Now, after more than 1 year, many remain in uniform. The absence of key personnel in tech sector has damaged startups' day-to-day operations, as well as their ability to attract foreign investors and raise funding. And finally, what has been a nail in the coffin of the tech sector has been the mobile and, in a smaller degree, the cell phone explosions that occurred in Lebanon. Given the nature of what has been described as a terroristic act, which involves tech to some degree, Israel's tech sector has taken a massive hit. Called Sinister Tech, the pager explosions have dealt another blow to Israel's tech sector. Israel's consumer tech terrorism across Lebanon was seen as a terrifying new global threat. And that does it for this Quick Tech section.
The Israeli regime, backed by the U.S., is on a military adventure now in Syria, which happened the day that there was a ceasefire between Israel and Lebanon and Hezbollah. The continuation of this war will surely continue to mount costs for the regime, and the U.S. will be there to back it. Israeli citizens, meanwhile, remain hostage to the regime officials. That does it for this edition of the program. Hope you enjoyed it. If you have any questions or comments, do send them to us. From Miko Vitahwe and the team, it's goodbye until the next program.
Ocean of Dua.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu Alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, The Ocean of Dua. In today's program, we will listen to a commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin. by Sheikh Abdul Reza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
On that morn, before the world was born, in this lonely world I hear that music near and far. Did we the cadence of divine music hear? Did we the cadence of
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. All praise belongs to Allah, the Lord of the worlds, and may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the best and the last of the prophets, Muhammad, and his pure and infallible progeny and household, especially his last successor, Imam Mahdi, may Allah hasten his reappearance. And may Allah's peace and blessings be upon you and with you, my dear brothers and sisters. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. This is the Ocean of Dua, and I am Abdul Rida Bahrani. Insha'Allah, I will explain and interpret the passages and sentences of the dua which is recited after Ziyarat al-Yasin in this series of lectures. Now let's listen to some passages of this Ziyarat.
Supplication following the Ziyarat of al-Yasin.
Allahumma inni as'aluka an tusalli ala Muhammadin nabi rahmatik wa kalimati nurik.
O Allah, I beseech you to send blessings upon Muhammad and the Prophet of your mercy and the word of your light.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad wa ajjil farajahum wa al'an adahum ajma'in.
In the previous session, we started to interpret and explain the dua which pursues Ziyarat al-Yasin. We start this dua with sending peace and blessings upon the Holy Prophet. And of course, not only we ourselves send our peace and blessings on the Holy Prophet, we ask Allah the Almighty to send His peace and blessings and salutations on the Holy Prophet, who is the Prophet of mercy and the Word of light. He is the Prophet of mercy. Through the Holy Prophet, we receive God's mercy. And through the Holy Prophet, we can be forgiven by Allah. We can receive the blessings and the mercy and favors of God the Almighty. As Allah the Almighty in the Holy Quran mentions, وَمَا أَرْسَلْنَاكَ إِلَّا رَحْمَةً لِلْعَالَمِينَ. We have not sent you to the people except as a mercy for the whole worlds. And the Holy Prophet is not only mercy for his nation, he is not only mercy for his ummah, he is mercy for all, not only for the humans, he is mercy for animals, for the other things, all the creatures of God, and He is mercy for the angels and mercy for the jinn. So He is rahmatan lil alamin. And unfortunately, we see that many Orientalists and many of non-Muslim historians and thinkers, they try to say that the Holy Prophet was not a merciful person. And you know, the religion of Islam spread in the world by the use of force and swords. But if truly we study the history of Islam and the actions of the Holy Prophet, we find that the Holy Prophet was a mercy for all the people. Those people who tortured the Holy Prophet and his followers, those people who waged wars against the Holy Prophet at a couple of times in myriad of times. They attacked Muslims and the Holy Prophet in Medina and outside Medina. They killed many of the Muslims. They insulted the Holy Prophet. They insulted God the Almighty and the beliefs of the Holy Prophet. But when the Holy Prophet got power over them in the city of Mecca, when he conquered the city of Mecca and he entered that city victoriously and vigorously, and he was surrounded with faithful believers and Muslims, at that time, one of the important figures of Medina, Sa'd ibn Ubadah, when he passed in front of Abu Sufyan, raised his voice and said, "Al-yawm yawmul malhama." Today is the day of vengeance. But the Holy Prophet, when heard this saying, he said, "No, la, al-yawm yawmul marhama. Today is the day of mercy. Today is the day of forgiveness." And he forgave all the people who wronged the Holy Prophet, who oppressed him and his followers and companions, those who tortured him and his companions, those people who threw stones at him. But he forgave all of them and said that today is Yawmul Marhama. Today is the day of forgiveness.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. How to pray for the faraj or the relief? Imam al-Asr ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu al-Sharif to his second representative, Muhammad bin Uthman rahmatullahi alayhi, addressing the Shias, says, "Pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief. One who is disturbed, distressed, and heartbroken due to the separation from the Imam, the prayers of such a person, they have two effects. Either the Imam's arrival will be hastened, or the afflictions, the problems, and the distresses of the person praying for the relief of the Imam, they will be removed. As a result, he will be eased, he will be pleased, and will be comforted. In either cases, as Imam al-Asr ajjalallahu ta'ala farajahu sharif has said, وَأَكْثِرُ الدُّعَى لِتَعْجِيلِ الْفَرَجِ فَإِنَّ ذَٰلِكَ فَرَجْكُمْ. Pray a lot for the relief, as indeed it is your relief.
Allahumma kun liwaliyika hujjat ibn al-Hasan salawatuka alayhi wa ala كل ساعة وليا وحافظا وقائدا وناصرا ودليلا وعينا حتى تسكنه أرضك طوعا
The Ocean of Dua, commentary of Ziyara al-Yasin by Sheikh Abdul Raza Bahrani, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
When he wanted to talk to the people of Mecca, who was conquered, after offering the prayer, he started talking to the people and said, "What do you think that I should do to you now, and what do you think that I am going to do?" They all said, "We know that you are a Kareem. You know that you are a man of dignity. You are a man of generosity and forgiveness and mercy. So you see, even his enemies, his foes, they knew that the Holy Prophet was a prophet of mercy, and the Holy Prophet forgave all of those people except 12 that they were, and they had the harshest behavior towards Islam and the Holy Prophet and Muslims. They were not forgiven at first, but later again, 6 of these 12 were forgiven by the Holy Prophet, and only 6 of them, they were killed. And of course, they were killed at battles. They again fought against Muslims, and because of that, they were killed. So this is how the religion of Islam spread, this with the mercy, with forgiveness, not with fighting and with sword and force. But unfortunately, those enemies of Islam who tried to propagate Islamophobia throughout the world, they say that the religion of Islam is a religion of fighting, is a religion of violence, war, and killings. But if they study the life of the Holy Prophet, they find that the Holy Prophet was the most merciful man. That is why here we call the Holy Prophet as Nabi al-Rahma wa Kalimat al-Nur, and we know that the Holy Prophet is a light, and His Eminence mentioned and said, أَوَّلُ مَا خَلَقَ اللَّهُ نُورِي, the first thing that God the Almighty created was my light. وَالْحَمْدُ لِلَّهِ رَبِّ الْعَالَمِينَ.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parsetoday.com. Until the next program, take care and goodbye.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAD 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir, and now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
A white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains
just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. Women and children alike, murdered and massacred night after night. While the so-called leaders of countries afar debated on who's wrong or right. But their powerless words were in vain, and the bombs fell down like acid rain. Through the tears and the blood and the pain, you could still hear that voice through the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go Gaza tonight. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in the night without a fight. We will not go down in Gaza tonight. A blinding flash of white light lit up the sky over Gaza tonight. People running for cover, not knowing whether they're dead or alive. They came with their tanks and their planes, with ravaging fiery flames, and nothing remains. Just a voice rising up in the smoky haze. We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Israel conducts fresh airstrikes on Syria, targeting its military facilities and equipment in the Daraa province. 50 more Palestinians are killed in a single day in the course of the Israeli ethnic cleansing campaign raging across the Gaza Strip. Meanwhile, the Israeli military continues to launch more strikes on southern Lebanon in defiance of a ceasefire deal with Beirut. Hello and welcome to World News. Let's go ahead and get started with the stories that matter. Israel has conducted yet another airstrike on Syria as the regime continues its aggression on the Arab country following its take.